The headlines this hour, U.S. bankruptcy filings resumed their upward climb in the first quarter of the year. Also ahead this hour, President Obama describes the relationship between oil companies and the U.S. federal regulators as cozy and promises to end it. HRW urges the new UK government to detach itself from the previous government's abusive counter-terrorism approaches. It is 2300 GMT and 3:30 a.m. here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is Press TV's World News. Well, it's another dim story for the U.S. economy. Latest data show bankruptcy filings are again moving upward. The filings have risen 27% in the past 12 months, ending March the 31st. Official data shows more than 1.5 million businesses and individuals have filed for bankruptcy during the period. This is the highest number of filings in years. What makes it worse is that some experts see the number to stay at above 1.5 million in future periods. The bad news comes as high unemployment and a strained housing market continue to squeeze American consumers. The unemployment rate has risen to 9.9% as more people began or resumed job searches. The U.S. President Barack Obama has promised to end, quote, the cozy relationship between oil companies and federal regulators. The U.S. government is under fire for allowing BP and other oil companies to drill in the Gulf of Mexico without the required permits.
For a decade or more, there's been a cozy relationship between the oil companies and the federal agency that permits them to drill. Seems as if permits were too often issued based on little more than assurances of safety from the oil companies. That cannot and will not happen anymore. To borrow an old phrase, we will trust, but we will verify.
Obama also condemned oil industry executives for seeking to pass the blame for the disaster. He was referring to congressional hearings on the disaster on Tuesday. The president promised efforts to stop the oil leak. He said BP is committed to pay for the response effort to the catastrophic oil leak. Meanwhile, officials have approved the use of controversial subsea chemical dispersants to battle the massive oil spill. The spill is poised to become the worst environmental disaster in U.S. history. Well, for more on our top story about the rise in U.S. bankruptcy filings, we're now joined by Jacob Kierkegaard with the Peterson Institute for International Economics, who's joining us via satellite from Washington. Sir, thank you very much for joining our broadcast. Now, was a 27% increase in filings expected at this stage in the recovery process, or is this continually bad news related to the U.S. economy a sign or even a warning that things will remain down or for a significant while longer, that is?
Yeah, no, I mean, I certainly think the 27% increase was more than the market had expected and more than I personally had expected. And it is indicative of the still tentative recovery that the U.S. economy is undergoing, basically suggesting that despite the fact that we saw in April the first big job gains number, we're by no means out of the woods yet, and the risk for a continued weakness in the economy is certainly there.
Right. Now, with the Chapter 7, 11, and 13 bankruptcies on the rise in the U.S., how will consumer confidence ever recover, considering businesses need to actually start making money in order for the economy to move forward?
Yeah, no, I mean, there's no doubt that a rise in bankruptcy is the kind of number that leads you, that will certainly make me predict that we're not going to have the kind of strong job generation number going forward that we had in April. And therefore, that's really, I think, the main channel in that is going to affect consumer confidence, because at the end of the day, most consumers are really looking at whether or not they can themselves go out and get a job, rather than looking them personally starting their own business. So it's really about the impact on the job generation capacity of the U.S. economy.
There's now even mention of Los Angeles declaring bankruptcy in the near future by some pessimistic economists who say the financial collapse of Greece should remind us of what's happening in California. Is that an exaggeration, or are things really that bad?
Well, I mean, the fiscal situation at the U.S. state and local government is absolutely critical. And what we've seen in Los Angeles is essentially a local government that's faced with either having to raise taxes quite considerably or go ahead and quite literally lay off thousands of teachers and other public servants. And, you know, ultimately, that leads to the risk of the necessity of having a bankruptcy declaration, mostly because in a bankruptcy filing, it becomes easier for the L.A. Local government to actually restructure another part of their liabilities, which is the pension systems that local teachers and other public servants have. And that's why there is a strategic element involved in a filing for bankruptcy or threatening to do so. But all that being said, you know, this really is indicative of the dire straits that U.S. state and local governments find themselves in right now.
So then am I hearing you say that filing for bankruptcy may actually not be a bad thing at this point for many people and businesses or even states like California?
No, not at all. I mean, I think, you know, this has a potential bankruptcy filing absolutely will have to be the final last resort that a local government resort to. Because basically, as I said, the strategic element in filing for bankruptcy is that unless you do that, it's almost impossible for a local government to seriously address what is very often very, very generous pension systems in place and very costly pension systems in place for state and local government retirees. In that regard, it's actually not dissimilar to what we saw with General Motors when they declared bankruptcy last year. One of the principal reasons that they did that was, in fact, to be able to completely restructure the pension system of General Motors.
Right now, Rush Limbaugh, the talk show host, likes to say that Washington has created the biggest financial deficit in the history of the world. And some say the U.S. needs to reconstruct a spending model that matches revenues, not borrowings. Are there any signs of the latter actually happening?
Well, certainly at the state and local level, this is very much happening because basically, unfortunately, I should say, for the prospect of a U.S. recovery, you know, state and local governments across the United States has quite literally been laying off tens of thousands of people in the last couple of months as a result of their inability to balance their budgets. And at the federal level, it's equally clear that we're not yet there. I mean, the United States last year and this year will run a 10% or so federal government budget deficit, which of course is something that is completely unsustainable in the long run. But irrespective of that, the Obama administration and most certainly Congress, who is heading into an election year this year. They have absolutely no appetite for either drastic cuts in federal government expenditure or an increase in taxes. So in that regard, we are very far from the required fundamental reform of U.S. government finances.
All right, well, Mr. Jacob Kierkegaard, we will have to leave it there for now. Jacob Kierkegaard with the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Sir, thank you very much for your insight. Well, the U.S. says it will raise its human rights concerns with China in the future. Assistant Secretary for Democracy, Human Rights and Labor Michael Posner says the U.S. and Chinese delegations had very respectful and direct negotiations. He mentioned that a wide range of questions, including the freedom of press, was discussed at the meeting. Posner noted that the American side told China how to behave in certain cases. The official stressed the two sides will continue their discussions next year in China. He also added that Washington and Beijing have very clear differences on certain issues. In related news, Human Rights Watch says Britain's new government should open a judicial inquiry into allegations of complicity in torture. The non-governmental organization says the UK should make a clean break with the previous government's abusive approach to counter-terrorism. It explains that allegations of complicity of UK intelligence services in the kidnapping and torture of terrorism suspects have tainted the nation's image worldwide. The group has also urged the new coalition government to reaffirm its support for the Human Rights Act. There has been growing evidence during the past year of serious abuses of detainees by British forces during the occupation of Iraq. Well, the British Prime Minister, David Cameron, has said he wants to build a new relationship with Scotland based on respect. Cameron made those comments during his first visit to the region since becoming Prime Minister. The Prime Minister is keen to demonstrate his interest in the region, where his party currently has very little support.
With the job of selecting his new cabinet done, David Cameron has now set himself the task of improving relations between Scotland and Westminster. As a Conservative Prime Minister, that will be difficult. While the Tories are now nationally the largest party, in Scotland they remain the least popular of the four major parties.
So Cameron has travelled to Scotland in the hope of improving his party's image as well as building bridges.
I want to try and win Scotland's respect as the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. That was truly said and truly meant. I also want to see a fresh start in the relationship between the British Prime Minister and the Scottish First Minister. This relationship is important. However much we may disagree about issues, we should try to work together for the benefit of the whole of the United Kingdom and for the benefit of Scotland as well.
The relationship between the previous Westminster administration, led by Gordon Brown, and the Scottish National Party, which runs the Scottish Parliament, was fraught with problems. But unlike Labour, the Conservatives aren't in direct competition with the SNP for parliamentary seats or control of the Scottish government.
The Conservatives are not really the SNP's deadly rivals in anywhere in Scotland, one or two places, not really. So, it might be an easier relationship. More to the point, David Cameron needs to continue to detoxify the Tory brand, particularly in Scotland, and therefore may find it relatively easy to play against type and offer Scotland things which a Labour government wouldn't.
The SNP have repeatedly railed against the Westminster Party's plans to slash public spending. They want continued investment to stimulate the economy. That, along with the SNP's long-term objective of an independent Scotland, will be flashpoints between the two governments.
The London parties have had a joint interest. Indeed, they have been determined to hide the full nature of their cuts agenda throughout the course of this campaign. They've made visible only a mere fraction of the plans that they have, leaving out the £1 billion of additional cuts below the surface. And like an iceberg, it is that enormous bit that remains unseen that poses the greatest risk and threatens the greatest damage.
But for now, David Cameron is keen to start off on a positive footing, aware that many in Scotland have questioned his mandate to govern the region. The Conservatives only managed to secure 17% of the Scottish vote in the elections.
I do believe that the Conservatives particularly have to work hard to win the trust of people in Scotland. That's why I'm here today. That's what I think the respect agenda is about. And I always said that before the election.
His visit was met with protests outside the building, while Alex Salmond, the SNP leader, has warned that it's his duty to stand up for Scottish interests and says that is what he intends to do. Hassan Ghani, Press TV, London.
It is close to 4:15 in the morning here in Tehran. A quick reminder of our top stories this hour. U.S. bankruptcy filings resumed their upward climb in the first quarter of the year. President Obama describes the relationship between oil companies and the U.S. federal regulators as cozy and promises to end it. And Human Rights Watch urges the new UK government to detach itself from the previous government's abusive counter-terrorism approaches.